This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring retired FBI special agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
How much is the road being paved to Alec Murdaugh's murder trial number two? Well, we got to have a little preview of that just the other day with a hearing that is right before the evidentiary hearing that's set to take place later in January, outlining who's going to be talking, what can we talk about, and just how strong do we think that evidence will be. Got a little peek behind the curtain here. Here to discuss that case and where it may be heading, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. I'm just going to open it up to you after that hearing and after we saw everything we saw and both sides said their parts. Where do you feel this is going?
Well, I've had a complete change of opinion on where this may be going. Initially, my needle was leaning a little bit toward a new trial.
Mm-hmm.
It was certainly at the 51-49 toward a new trial possibility. My needle has gone way down now to maybe a 10% chance of a new trial. After listening to that hearing, it took a long time to listen to that hearing. It was not a short hearing, and there was a lot to cut up. But essentially, the judge took the parameters and the scope and dialed it way down. And not only dialed it way down in terms of the burden, she did what we expected, right? Put the burden directly on the defense to prove, but created a super high burden. In other words, they have to show, meaning the defense, exactly when, exactly what was said.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kicker, how what was said was perceived by the jurors, even saying that essentially they need to demonstrate that she did so, meaning Hill, to prejudice them.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have to show when, they have to show how, they have to, you know, the jurors are going to have to tell the judge how they perceived what, you know, they understood. And then secondarily, that she meant to do it, that mm-hmm. she meant to sway them. That's a huge burden. And how is it supposed to be overcome? The judge is going to interview them. Now, I'm so glad to see this isn't going to be a, you know, a dog and pony show with these poor jurors just getting, you know, anytime you face a defense attorney, it's tough. And so I'm so glad how this was decided, or is going to be decided.
There'll be less, I feel, raking people over the coals that don't need to be raked over the coals when it comes to this. The burden of proof, I think, is something that, you know, is it being followed to the letter of the law, though? I mean, I guess that would be kind of the question. The defense believes they just need to prove that she said those things. How it affected the jurors, that's up to the jurors. How do you prove something like that? Number one, okay, you have to prove she intended to do it. Well, I would assume if you go into a group of jurors and you say something to the effect of don't believe his lies, which I believe there's a sworn affidavit stating from one of the jurors that that is what was said. I don't know if that was the alternate that never actually had a say or who it was exactly. But the fact that it was said in that at sort of a presence, that I think is clearly showing intent. If you're expressing don't believe somebody, your intent is to try and express that you don't want people to believe this person. But then to get into someone's mind and say, you know, what she said to me really did or did not affect my choice. I don't know how anyone truly even does that, including the person who made the decision, because at the end of the day, your choices, you make them based on the combobulation of information that you have in your head. And to say that that wouldn't weigh in some way, shape, or form, you know, I think is, I just don't think that that's an accurate thing to be able to even decipher or to argue in court. But it looks like they're going to have to find some way of doing it if they want a new trial.
Well, also, and the judge said that she hasn't seen any of this information, but, you know, the jurors were interviewed by SLED mm-hmm. and they did it recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And then the agents with SLED reduced what was said to what we call a MOI, or they call an MOI. We call them 302s, but a memorandum of interview. So from there, at least according to what was said in court, you know, there was nothing from these jurors indicated any sort of jury tampering. According to that. So, and the judge, you know, made the point, listen, I haven't read any of those, you know, so I like that she's going in completely open-minded to the situation, not having read, you know, anything. But we have basically one juror that's given an affidavit, mm-hmm. because only one juror that counted, yeah. right? One juror that convicted, helped convict.
Yeah.
So when you think of that, I mean, I think it's going to be very interesting. What happens if all the 11 others said she never said it like that, mm-hmm. or she didn't say that at all? I never heard her say that. And again, the judge said she wants it narrowed down to when they're going to have to narrow it down. Well, what happens if she says it was on a Thursday? I mean, does the affiant that came out with all of this, right, for the defense, mm-hmm. does she have a specific time frame?
Yeah.
Or she just says, generally, I think I remember on some. The judge is not going to roll with that.
No.
As well, she shouldn't, especially if she has 11 others say, I never even heard that.
It's all about, too, I mean, context is so key to this. I mean, how many times in life where here's a good example, texting. When you text somebody, one person can read a text one way, one person can read it another way because you don't have tone and inflection. Sometimes it happens, too, with people speaking aloud. One person seems to be really in tune with that individual and gets their tone and inflection, and the other does not, and maybe takes something completely in a different way than it should have been. We're talking if she said something to the effect of, don't get caught up in his lies or whatever, something to that effect. Who knows? I mean, it could have been a one-on-one conversation with a juror, and it's just kind of the knee-jerk reaction of, don't get caught up. I don't know. There's ways where this could have been more innocent than it was. The fact that it was even said aloud, I mean, that's where, she should have had a little more candor there and realize even if you are saying that, doesn't matter how, you can't say something like that. But yeah, the bar is a bit higher than I think a lot of us expected it to be. The judge also really making a point the other day about the hearing itself and what is going to be discussed. It's stating that the trial is not about Hill. It's about focusing on her interactions with jurors and the jurors' ability to reach the impartial verdict. So that essentially, to me, came out as, all the other stuff we're hearing about Becky Hill, all the stuff about the improper use of her office, the whatever the heck's going on with her son, with the wiretapping, and anything else that's kind of out there in the ether that seems to be an assault on her character or just simply a reflection of her character that we're learning about, those don't seem to be like they're going to be brought into this at the end of the day for making a consideration on whether or not she was tampering with a jury.
100%. The judge doesn't want any part of that. I think her exact words are she is not on trial.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that extraneous stuff that you and I have been talking about, and really it's just been out there everywhere, that isn't going to come into play at all. Mm-hmm. So when you dial this little microscope down now to really this pinhole, principle that we're looking at, maybe 10% chance of a new trial with what has been presented now that I heard in all that courtroom testimony.
I think it really, it defined it a lot more. I mean, you have to put blinders on now and go, okay, well, this is all that they can be looking at. This is all that we can be considering. You know, it's when you take that other big chunk out of this case of all the other improprieties, it's not super strong. Those other pieces are what seem to give it a lot more merit. But I mean, look at Alec Murdaugh. Look at that case right there. He got sunk, I think, more so because of the horrible things he did as a human being financially to people than even the murders, because the murders themselves had a lot of weird holes in that just were very difficult to explain. Not to say he didn't do it, but more difficult to kind of wrap your mind around than the very clear acts of the financial crimes that he committed.
Well, the big mistake, I believe, was the minute he took that stand, as a person that would sit next to the prosecutors in all of these cases, I salivated. We all did whenever they said they were going to take the stand, wringing our hands, because it was the chance to talk with them. And in all the cases, you know, the reason that we're there is because we believe they're guilty.
Yeah.
I mean, shame on any FBI agent that takes a case to a prosecutor and doesn't think the facts bear that that person is guilty. Shame on them.
Yeah.
If they don't even believe in their own case and in their own facts. So when he went up there and said he wasn't there, and then that recording came out, it was just drop the mic moment,
100%.
You know, and in this hearing the other day, if you could have seen his face, and maybe you did watch it, I was just watching him. He had this smiley kind of happy grin throughout. And as soon as he saw the ruling by the judge on the narrow focus, oh my gosh, he was just, he got an evil look.
Yeah.
I posted it on my Twitter, the evil look of Alex Murdaugh crossed his face.
And let's
say, he was
say,
like, this is not going the way I want it to. Sorry, Tony.
No, let's go through this. Let's say, okay, they have the hearing and the judge says, nope, you do not get a new trial. This does not meet that burden. Does Alex Murdaugh go off into the night? Does he just disappear into the prison system and lives a quiet life and we never really hear from him again? I scared to even ask the question, what would the next recourse be for him to try and get a new trial? Or I'd imagine they'd be trying to fight something.
Oh, they're going to fight it. They'll just keep appealing up until, you know, the Supreme Court, if it took them that far on this very point. But there's a lot of case law. The prosecutor did a good job of really digging deep into case law that supported their position. Mm-hmm. The defense had case law also. But it was so crystal clear after listening to those cases, the citations and the arguments to the judge, and really most listening, that no, this is jury tampering and it's very focused.
Sick of the ads?
We opt too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now